our website at www.energy.gov or call toll-free 1-877-337-3463. This powerful savings message is provided by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Alliance to Save Energy.
I don't believe it. My savings are gone. They're gone.
You're kidding.
Nope, they're gone. They're gone, gone.
Okay, all right. Think about it. Where did you have them last?
I remember I was home, then I took them, and then I spent them on that vacation to Aruba. Then I bought this miniature suit of armor I saw in the in-flight magazine.
And that's the last you saw of your savings?
Yes.
This is so weird.
I know, right?
Weird? Not really. Not saving now means no money later. You'd be surprised how quickly a little money from every paycheck can really add up. Put away a few bucks, feel like a million bucks. For free ideas and easy ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. That's feedthepig.org.
The armor is cool, though. Oops. I think I broke its gauntlet.
You broke my favorite part.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Okay, well, that explains it then. Wow. Feed the pig? Okay, it's just about 6 o'clock, and you are listening to WUSB Stony Brook. Please keep listening. Yeah, don't be driven away. It's time for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. This is Emmanuel, and I think I'm joined by Kyle.
Yes, I'm here. I'm enjoying a lovely sunset in the Pacific Northwest in an industrial part of King County. You might hear a train.
Oh, I'd like to hear a train. Could you arrange that?
I'll see what I can do.
Okay. You're right by a bunch of freight trains, I believe, that go hurtling by.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Something we don't get enough of here on Long Island. We saw a freight train, actually, not too long ago, right, passing through Stony Brook, but that doesn't happen very often at all.
Yeah, I think most of that is capital improvements. A lot of that incredible tie replacement and revitalization they're doing, a lot of those stops, especially I'm thinking there on campus, are really beautiful,
mm-hmm.
the new Stony Brook stop.
Yeah, they're doing some definite improvements. I don't know if it'll make the trains go any faster. It would be nice if it did, but at least it'll be a smoother ride.
That's right. Well, we can only hope.
Yes. So Kyle, you're out in Seattle. You got there quick. That took off right after Election Day.
Yes.
And you'll be back next week, so don't panic, people. I can sense, people look concerned. It's, sometimes we have to see how the rest of the country's doing. It's important. How is the Pacific Northwest doing?
Well, it's doing all right. I've noticed a couple things and, observed a lot of the same stuff. I feel like the housing problem is a big deal. I had enough of politics and all of that and decided to come out here. And, Seattle's not without its own issues. I mean, it's oft thought of as a liberal kind of place out here. But surprise, surprise, economic interests, tend to win out. And I'll be remiss not to mention just the influx, sort of explosion of homelessness since I was last here.
And what do you attribute that to?
Well, I don't know. I don't know personally the exact reasons, but I think that the investments in the metropolitan area of Seattle are really just going to the kinds of housing that only young tech professionals or, people with means can afford, and it's really unfortunate. But I think another attribute of it is an extremely serious drug problem in Seattle.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I'm not talking about cannabis per se, and that itself, may be helping, for all I know, not necessarily with homelessness, but opioids and heroin are... There's still clearly a vexing issue out here, and it doesn't seem that people are doing very much about it. I mean, I'm sure, church groups and as many organizations as possible are doing what they can, but it's really unfortunate to see development and progress and hopeful things just right alongside just destitute encampments and people living in ravines and, off the train tracks everywhere, really. It just seems like there's a lot of people trying to survive out here. And, I think drugs are a big part of that.
Wow, that's pretty sad to hear. I think it's because you also don't have very severe winters. That I know this was an issue in the Bay Area where it's nice all year long. I don't want to say it's nice all year long in the Pacific Northwest, but I think in New York it gets a lot more bitterly cold. So I'm not putting the responsibility on homeless people to find homes, but I just think that might be why more people seem to be in that area.
Yeah.
Because they're able to survive that way. But the real question is, how come they're in that position in the first place?
Yeah, no, the root cause is the issue. I jokingly would suggest that the outdoors camping, hiking, and other draws to the area are perhaps part of what equip people to camp all the time, everywhere, permanently. I think your train is here.
Yeah, I can hear it.
Anyway, it's really that, yeah, I mean, REI and everybody's providing the outdoor living accommodations. But you're right. I mean, people would sort of migrate during, I guess, the colder months down south and then come back up for the summers. So I guess it's cooling out now, although just in general, temperatures are a little higher. So, you know, maybe Seattle is the new Bay Area.
Well, that's not what you want, I don't think, because what happened to the Bay Area, rents have soared through the stratosphere. And you know, I'm a little concerned because Amazon has announced they're opening up a massive warehouse in Long Island City. 25,000
yeah.
jobs, and you know, all the politicians are happy about this. I'm not sure how good it's going to be for the people who live in the area.
Yeah.
I don't want to see rents going up even more than they already have, and I'm just a little worried that we're going to see something similar in you know, more of a traditional area, the warehouse district of Queens and Brooklyn, and of course it'll extend over to Manhattan. And you know, Google is now announcing they're going to be expanding in New York as well. It's just, where does this end? Let New York be New York, at least.
Absolutely, and I hope New York resists things, or at least makes sure that these ideas and projects are implemented on their terms. I would also point to there was a great article that actually discussed this in the paper, The Times, this weekend or last couple of days, regarding exactly that, sort of blaming Amazon a little bit and citing Seattle as an example, you know, attracting a lot of talent and so on, and hiring and pushing out a lot of the lower income and cultural phenomena in the downtown area explicitly, but also in outer areas as well. And that development, you know, something I've noticed for quite a long time when I was in school with the likes of tech companies like Microsoft and others. So I'm really sensitive to that. But I also think that, you know, half-baked or sort of do-gooding missteps can also be a problem. I heard from a friend that some of the needle exchanges give you, like, 50 times the needle, you know, for one needle. And it's like, okay, this is going to make the drug problem better, but you're also sort of enabling it. You know, things like that. You know, people really should think these things through. You know, if you're going to build a headquarters, be considerate. Be considerate of what you're going to do, how you're going to transform the economy. Maybe you only see the good, but you end up displacing people.
Yes, absolutely. And that should be the number one priority, is keeping people in places where they, you know, they have lived all their lives, where they're comfortable, where they want to be. And when you start displacing them and making it unaffordable, you're doing a real disservice.
And taking away education, you really make it so that they do not stand a chance. They do not have the means to educate themselves to be a part of whatever economy you're stimulating in that community. And I think it's tragic. It kind of gets me down. It makes me think of endless critiques of capital at all costs and revenue and just profit seeking, and just the sort of cold nature of things. And then when people get sort of too far gone, they can't pull themselves out of it, and then people just look at them, you know, as beneath ordinary people, and they're not. You know, we're all equal, and it's a real shame, but. I have high hopes. I think New York's resilient and can bring some of these issues up.
I hope so. I really do. Because
it can definitely point to us, you know, Seattle.
Yeah, that's kind of a point to Seattle as an example. I don't know. There's so many good things about Seattle that I'd like to emulate. but you know, Amazon and massive tech companies taking over, that's definitely not one of them.
And that's just their footprint in the communities. What they're doing on the internet and with technology is an entirely different story.
Right.
We cover often on Wednesdays, but you know, it's the big picture is pretty daunting if you really start thinking about it.
Absolutely, and this whole thing transcends politics because you know, you find that the politicians tend not to care, regardless of what side they're on, when it comes to something like this. They may say they do, but you know, when it comes to big companies signing signing on and you getting the credit for it and the economy going up and all that, the collateral damage kind of it becomes collateral damage and is left behind, and nobody really talks about that. So. I don't know. This is maybe it'll be good. Maybe it'll be a fun thing that having a massive warehouse in Long Island City. I don't know. I guess we'll just have to see.
Yeah, we'll take the pressure off of this part of the country and offload it over there where you are. But
yeah, and also Virginia, they're getting one too. So it's going to be three big warehouses. I know it's going to affect traffic. So yeah. That's something that. Go ahead.
I think we'll have to watch it. We'll have to watch it very closely, and I think we should start calling Jeff Bezos Jeffrey.
Okay, if that's something you want to do.
Yeah, that does it for me, and it just makes me feel a little better.
Well, you know, you have to take those things that make you feel better and run with them because they may be the only things we have.
Enough about Jeffrey.
Yes, enough about all these people. But I do want to talk about the events of last week because we sure went through it. And we said we were going to talk about our activities a little bit. And I think we should, just, you know, slightly anyway. We got involved with the Barry Gershon campaign. In fact, what we did was, what you did, which was amazing, was outfit the 2600 van with some political signs.
Yes.
Totally covering up all hacker connections, but it still looked like an old-fashioned phone truck, and everybody loved it. But what we did was we drove through, I think, every community in the 1st Congressional District here on Long Island, you know, rather slowly to the consternation of the people behind us, but playing music, playing kind of a marching band theme, and waving at people and things like that. We got a lot of thumbs up, a lot of... you know, a lot of smiles, a couple of middle fingers, especially from old people. I don't know what that's all about, but a lot of real anger. How dare you run somebody against the incumbent? Well, that's kind of how it works, folks. But, you know, we did this for a while, and it was fun. It really was, you know, the first time I'd ever done anything like that. It was, you know, we kind of felt like we were immersing ourselves in the political process. You know, I feel like, you know, we didn't just preach, we practiced. We actually got out and did something, did what we could. And I just hope, you know, a lot of people did things like that where, you know, whether they could contribute money or contribute time or just ingenuity, I hope they were received with open arms. I hope you were creative with the ideas that you put forth. I would say, a fun experience.
Yeah, it was like exponential, the energy. You know, the more we were out, the more people saw us, the more you know, ideas and different signs. You know, people were making custom signs for signs that got taken down that basically said, "Where's our equality? You know, why'd you take our sign?" Or this once was a sign, but somebody took it. You get all these different things with the visual and getting the name recognition out there. And the van was really fun because it was mobile and I enjoyed it. That was definitely some of my finer handiwork, and I think it went, you know, a good distance, no pun intended, but to get people, you know, invigorated and thinking and a little bit more bold to represent the ideas and the beliefs, you know, and who manifests that in X, Y, or whatever race it is, in this case, New York One. And I think it was full bore. We were all in and doing as much as we could. I had helped build signs when I was little, and do some little bits of politicking in my community and among friends and family, you know, helping out. But I didn't know anything about it. I wasn't that passionate about it. I was just a kid being put to work. So I took some of that experience, and in this moment, tried to do as much in that spirit as I could, because I felt very strongly that, you know, New York One deserved a little bit better representation.
Yes, indeed. In fact, you know, we were inspired by ourselves, I guess, talking about that particular race over the weeks, and just seeing the non-responsiveness from our current rep, Lee Zeldin, and you know, it's when somebody doesn't engage, when somebody doesn't respond, when someone simply shuts out the people that are disagreeing, or that might be a challenge, or might be in the way or inconvenient. That's when you realize this is not somebody you can support. And on the other hand, when we met some of the Paragershon folks, nothing but open invitations and willingness to engage in all kinds of discussions. He went, we reported on this, he went to some forums where the crowd was mostly hostile, but he went there anyway. Didn't have to do that. He was the underdog, but he did it. And that was inspiring. And I think it was inspiring to a lot of people in different races throughout the country. Now, what happened in our particular race, we went to a, I guess it's called a viewing party or something, where all the local races and candidates kind of converged together. There was this space in Hopog where all these people were doing that. And we went there election night, 1 week ago tonight, and saw the returns start coming in. Now, as you probably know, our candidate did not win, and it was pretty apparent from the start. Very disappointed in that, actually, because, you know, I really think Suffolk County missed an opportunity here, and instead many people just went with, you know, the whole Trump thing. They just bought into it. They bought into the caravan of migrants who are on their way here to do God knows what, MS-13, 9-11, whatever, you know, whatever fear tactic was stirred in you. It seems to have worked, and that's very unfortunate. But I am very proud of the people that were active, that came out, that tried. I know so many people were heartbroken. I mean, we all really thought we had a good chance. Barry Gershon was endorsed by Newsday. He was endorsed by the New York Times. He was endorsed by pretty much every newspaper on Long Island, many of which I hadn't even heard of before. You know, he was the better candidate. I will continue to believe that. He wasn't a politician. You know, I kind of thought that was a good thing. I kind of thought that's something the Trump people might actually appreciate. But nope, they didn't. There was virtually nothing I could see in the platform that would be harmful to them. I guess, you know, unless you believe health care is something bad, and apparently a lot of people seem to believe that, there was really very little that I could find fault with, even if I was pretending to be one of the people that was supporting Lee Zeldin. You know, he was supporting the military, he was supporting the economy, all kinds of things. It was just kind of sad to see that it wasn't enough. But, you know, you have to pick yourself up after this. It's weird, though, because, you know, we were down there in Hopog, and we were kind of watching all these other people, and there was a lot of cheering going on. Because there were so many different races being represented there. But I got a little bit annoyed because, you know, every time there was a Democrat who was ahead, it was this whole big celebration. Literally, the tax receiver for Huntington was a Democrat and was ahead, and that got a big round of cheers. And I'm like, really? This is, I mean, I guess, but it just felt like such a tiny victory compared to what it should be. You know, I wanted the Senate back. I wanted the House to be, you know, predominantly Democrat. And it took a couple of days to realize that, yeah, you know what, it was a victory. There were a lot of, you know, firsts in this particular election, a lot of women who got elected. All kinds of milestones were achieved. It just kind of didn't feel that way at the time. And we were a little bit depressed for a day or two because of that. But I think when you look at the bigger picture, you realize we are making progress. It doesn't always come the way you want it to. It doesn't always come to you locally. But, you know, we're like a big ship moving forward slowly and eventually getting to the destination. I don't know. Is that the feeling you got out of it?
Well, yeah, it takes time, and it's a system. It's, as I said, you know, it's cumbersome in some moments, but really, it's, as he said, like, you know, the other side, Zeldin was counting on quiet and not having genuine people like Gershon step up and challenge and that was accomplished. We definitely saw a pretty good challenge, especially in the debates and some of the issues that were brought up. As far as the poll review there at the Union Hall, when we were watching the polls and the results come in, there were, you know, a lot of people there, as you said, and there was this one guy standing next to us. I don't know who he was. He looked like, just, he said, boy, what a bunch of drips. And, you know, like we were all sad sacks or something. And first of all, who says drips anymore?
Wow.
I mean, I
haven't heard that in a long time.
He really conjured that up. He's chatting up some woman and like, yeah, well, boy, what a bunch of drips. And I kind of wanted to turn to it. I let it go. But it just annoyed me that, you know, he you know, is some professional politician or God knows what. But actually, as you said, a couple of days later, he's probably right. We had reason to be a little bit more upbeat, but we were so invested. We'd worked so hard and being outspoken and challenging that seat. It did feel a little bit of it felt like a little bit of a deflation. But looking back, I wouldn't have changed a thing. I'm happy to have went to hand, and I think the theme is to not be silent, not allow them that, and you know, we'll be back, you know, as a district, I would say, there will be a new challenger and more input and voices, you know, down the road.
Yeah, it's only 2 years. You know, you pretty much have to start running for re-election right away. So it won't be very long in that particular race. And the other thing to remember is that all five of the House incumbents on Long Island won their reelection bids, all five. And that includes Representative Peter King and Democratic Representative Tom Suozzi. And after the election, they were talking about bipartisanship, you know, throughout, actually, during the election, during their campaign. If Democrats really want to do deals, I think the president is there, but he has to realize he can't get everything he wants. And Democrats have to realize that there has to be some common ground here. That's Peter King saying that. Suozzi said, I'm going to encourage my colleagues as much as possible to come together to solve the problems that people face. Yeah, it may not be much, but it's something. It sounds like at least they're willing to talk. The one, again, who was silent, Lee Zeldin, didn't say anything about compromising or talking to people that you might disagree with or anything like that. So, yeah, First District, you made your choice, so that's what's going to be our reality for the next 2 years. I should also point out, we did some coverage on WUSB a week ago, and, I had my Dewey Defeats Truman moment, I think is what it's being called. Because, well, okay, here's the thing. We were seeing results being posted. And, you know, here's a little secret. When results get posted in a political headquarters like that on election night, where literally hundreds of people are there, you know, checking the results, it's basically somebody on a website hitting refresh. That's literally what's going on. So they were doing this. They were actually alternating between two websites. I think one was run by New York State, one was run by Suffolk County. And at one point, you know, we were watching the races for about an hour, but at one point, everyone started cheering because a challenger, Luba Gretchen Shirley, who was running against Peter King, had pulled ahead. She had pulled ahead, and it was really stunning. And we were beside ourselves, and then we saw that she was still ahead with, I think, only six districts left to report. And it looked like she was going to win, and that's what we said. We said that over the air, because like, everybody around us was believing the same thing. But guess what?
It was urgent.
Yeah,
it was quite a surprise.
It was a real surprise, a real shock, and I was wondering why nobody else was picking up the story. Well, it turns out the way they do things, and this is really boneheaded, if you ask me, they were only showing the Suffolk County results to that crowd because it was the Suffolk County Board of Elections. Now, that particular district spans two counties. It's Suffolk County and Nassau County. So the results in Nassau County, which we were not seeing, were very different. And that, of course, allowed Peter King to keep his seat. But we didn't know that. And it wasn't being said. It wasn't being displayed. And everybody around us was believing the same thing. I don't understand why congressional districts cross county lines. I don't understand any of this, how the whole gerrymandering, and they should make it simple, you know. They should make boundaries be boundaries for different things, because this was a real confusing mess. And I just want to apologize if anyone heard me saying that Peter King's about to lose his seat, which is definitely something I've been hoping for many, many years. I'm sorry if I got your hopes up. It didn't happen. It didn't happen because I was confused as to what I was looking at. I thought I was looking at returns, and I was only looking at half the returns. But, boy, you know, I learned something, and I guess that's what elections are all about.
In fairness, there wasn't really any kind of host. As you said, it was just a screen, and you'd see, like, the person on the laptop behind the screen, and it was just, like, these legs and torso sort of disembodied, and you knew they were running this website, but nobody's really talking. Everybody was kind of standing around, and so the explanation of why that was going on, it's understandable that you could have overlooked that, but there was really no clarification, and as soon as it started, there were candidates up there giving concession speeches and basically wishing everyone well and thanking them for helping, Perry in particular.
Yeah, Perry Gershon was very quick to concede and be gracious, and I think he did a really good job for somebody who never ran for office before. Hopefully not the last we'll see of him. And just to put things in perspective, what happened here on Long Island, I mentioned all five House incumbents won their re-election bids, but what happened in the state Senate was very, very different. The Democrats basically took charge. Now, this is something that has never happened before. For years, all nine of Long Island state senators were Republicans. Think about that. All nine Long Island state senators were Republicans for years. And Long Island has never had more than two Democratic senators at one time. Now, they will have six. So think about that. That is a change. That is a big change. So it was mirrored.
Total or in one or the other party? I'm a little confused.
Six Democrats, three Republicans, as opposed to nine Republicans, zero Democrats.
As opposed to nine, yeah.
Or whatever it was before this election. But it was never more than two Democrats. Now it's six. So there were some incredible victories and milestones throughout the country. It's going to be very interesting come January when the House of Representatives is run by Democrats, because they will be able to challenge Trump. They will be able to get his tax returns. They'll be able to do all kinds of things. Now, yeah, unfortunately, the Senate will still, I think, I mean, there's still a couple of races that are being figured out to this moment, but I'm pretty sure it will remain in Republican hands, which means, you know, if Ruth Bader Ginsburg takes another fall, we could see, another Kavanaugh-like person on the Supreme Court. So it's really... the weirdness of the system will determine where we go next. And, of course, all the craziness that's been going on. I mean, you know, we have we saw the Arizona Senate race settled last night when the Republican candidate conceded, as she should have done, because at that point she was behind by, I think, 2 percentage points. And it was good to see a gracious concession, which is something that many people on that side seem to have forgotten how to do, or even a gracious victory speech. Because, you know, we have Georgia, we have Florida, where the races are still very, very tight, and they have to do a recount because they were so tight. And then you have Trump going on Twitter saying that it's not possible to get a fair recount, basically putting us on the verge of civil war. Because by saying that, imagine if the recount shows something different. And his candidate for Senate in Florida loses, or his candidate for governor in Florida loses. People will say, hey, Trump said it was rigged, so this is invalid. And you know, before you know it, there's people on the street protesting the election itself, saying it wasn't a valid election, when in actuality they are just trying to count the damn votes. And I don't see what the big deal is. It was a close race. When it's a close race, you do a recount, and... you know, sometimes the recounts are challenging. I know there are some counties that are going to have trouble meeting the deadline. Well, you know what? It's more important that you count the votes and you meet a particular deadline. Extend the damn deadline Count the votes. See how many votes there are. That's what this is all about. Sometimes the absentee ballots take longer to get to address than it should. Sometimes people are disqualified for invalid reasons, and while they're challenging that, that takes time. There are people who submitted mail-in ballots who received them back days after the election saying, your signature didn't match, sorry, your vote doesn't count. Obviously invalid, obviously something that needs to be rectified. That takes time. So, you know, it really bothers me to see any particular party say, nope, we're done, we counted, it's over, when so many people are still disenfranchised, have not been treated fairly. So do this right or don't do this at all. It's really a fairly simple thing. I don't trust anybody who just wants to get it over with and doesn't want to be sure.
Yeah, that's political overreach for people manipulating that process. The elections board should be independent and allowed to do their processes according to precedent and the protocols and laws that are already on the books. It's really it's talking out of the side of your mouth to try to get it may work for a certain political base, but that's not American, and it's really unfair to democracy.
It really bothers me, all these methods of cheating, that we see.
Yeah.
It really, abuse of power. For instance, the Secretary of State of Georgia is running was running for governor and was also in charge of the election. That should not happen. I mean,
yeah.
you shouldn't have to rely on him doing the right thing. Obviously, he's not going to do the right thing. So, when a situation like that arises, they should just not allow it to happen. They should not allow somebody to be in charge of the election who also is benefiting from the election. That is simply wrong. And now, Rick Scott is governor of Florida. He was also running for Senate. So that's one of the races that is in the middle of a recount. He should not have any control over that at this point. Yes, he's the governor, but he's also a candidate. So, his rulings can benefit that particular candidate in that particular race. That should not be allowed. That's wrong. And the fact that these people are refusing to step down from those positions, refusing to hand it over to someone a bit more independent, that is really, really troubling. And it just bothers me that, that's not a natural thing, that this is wrong, this should not happen, regardless of what side it is. I would speak out if it was a Democrat doing the same thing. It tarnishes the entire institution.
I would be willing to say that a wager that new and unexperienced politicians, not the professional types, they wouldn't know how to do that. But this is, what kind of political creature do you have to be to both be running and manipulating and pulling strings and doing all these things behind the scenes to game the system? It's just, I think, an attribute of having people that are making their life's work, being a politician in a professional sense,
Uh-huh. And that wasn't the only thing either. We had Rick Scott was basically planning on his last day in office. This is what he was planning. He would appoint three Republicans to the Florida Supreme Court. Now, the state constitution says that three existing Democratic appointed justices on the court would hit mandatory retirement on the same date that he would exit the governor's mansion, which is January 8th. Now, Scott twisted the meaning of this to interpret it as the justices would be out of office at midnight on January 8th, but he would still be governor until the moment the next governor is sworn in, meaning he would have a window of a few hours to jam his own cronies onto the court instead of the next governor. So basically, in September, in anticipation of this, Scott ordered the Judicial Nominating Commission, whose members he himself appointed, to give him a list of candidates to pick from on January 8th. Now, had he gone through with this scheme, the Florida Supreme Court would have gone from 4-3 Republican appointees to 7-0, all but ensuring the state courts would become a rubber stamp for the GOP regardless of who won the governor's race. That is cheating. That is cheating. Now, thank God for the League of Women Voters. You notice they're stepping up a lot and suing when they're suing to make sure the recount goes forward. They sued back here, and they made sure that he did not get away with that. But it doesn't end there. Look what Wisconsin Republicans are doing. They lost. The governor's office will go Democratic. Tony Evers defeated Governor Scott Walker on Tuesday. Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald said on Thursday that Republicans in the state legislature plan to strip the new governor of some of the authority those same lawmakers gave to Walker when he took office in 2011. Fitzgerald said that Republicans want to give Evers less authority in state rules that implement state laws. Republicans are worried that Evers could use the power they gave to Walker 8 years ago to weaken laws passed by the legislature. In other words, you know, they want to do the same thing that was done in North Carolina a couple of years ago, also by Republicans, taking away the power of the governor who was just elected. The power they had no trouble giving to the previous governor because he was on the same political party. That is cheating. You might be able to legally do it, but it's still cheating.
I think the analogy is it's sort of like an open bar when they're in power, but no drinking when the opposition is.
Yeah, all of a sudden you get, we have to follow these particular rules now.
They find religion.
It's awful. It's awful, and it's got to be fought. It's got to be, kept from happening because these abuses, there are just so many of them that are totally against the spirit of democracy. And gerrymandering is certainly high up on the list of the things that run counter to what we should be all about.
And the lesson is the fight's not over.
No, it's not. And they will pull every dirty trick in the book. And sometimes you have to fight back. You have to fight fire with fire. And if you're going to make the system fair again, for instance, that's what Chuck Schumer wants to do. He wants to make it so that you can only you have to have a two-thirds majority in the Senate, not a majority. Not simply 51 votes, which is great to say, but if you do that when you get into power and then they undo it when you get out of power, you're just hurting yourself. You need a system that will last, that will not simply be used against you as soon as you're no longer the majority. And, we have to get meaner. We have to be able to, fight these people on their terms until we change the system so that they can't do this again. Now, and it doesn't end there. I'm just talking about the legal things that they're doing that are slimy and sleazy and cheating. But then there are the other things which just say so much about their personality. Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith, Republican in Mississippi, she faced a little bit of pushback on Sunday after a local publisher posted a video in which she said that she'd be on the front row if she were invited to a public hanging. I mean, what in God's name are you thinking? Well, it doesn't matter what the context is. Why would anyone say something like, you're in Mississippi, for God's sake, you're a politician. In what world is conjuring up the image of lynchings and as a positive thing acceptable? What universe are you in? It's just...
There's a lot of dehumanizing going on.
You notice that, huh? A lot of
it. I think it's people are trying to prepare themselves in the eventuality of a real fight. And by doing this stuff, you really demean and dehumanize people. Saying, classes of people don't deserve this or don't deserve that, you're not too far away from doing real damage. And even joking, that's... especially with the historic context, it's just wrong.
Well, that brings to mind the other, and there's so many of these to talk about. We need more time to talk about them. But the other event that took place in Wisconsin, the photo that emerged of all these high school juniors doing a Nazi salute.
What is up with that?
Unmistakable, yes. Nazi salute. In fact, many of them even admit, yes, that's what it is. And there are horror stories coming out of this high school, all kinds of bullying, all kinds of, machoism and just, it's basically Stoneman Douglas in Bizarro World, it's a complete opposite of that. It's very, very disturbing. But, you know, the thing that disturbs me the most, first of all, many of the news stories are shading out the faces, but you can find other places where the faces are crystal clear, and you can see the varying expressions. It might be a couple of people who are obviously uncomfortable, but most people are full on into it. But when you see something like this posted, invariably the comments go, well, it's just free speech. You know, this is something that, why are we getting so upset about this? Kids will be kids. It's totally missing the point as to what this is all about. You know, we just had the anniversary of Kristallnacht, you know, only a few days ago, where all kinds of Jewish businesses and synagogues throughout Germany were torched. And basically, I guess, you know, the launching of the Holocaust began on that night, if not before then, for many of the conditions. And they know nothing about this. This is something they couldn't care less about. So if they are just ignorant teenagers, well, let's change that. Let's not embrace that. Let's not say, oh, yeah, they're just being, you know, kids. That's not how kids should be. And there should not be hate crime. There should not be terror. There should not be targeting of any particular religious group or ethnic group or race or anything like that. And if you simply close your eyes to it, you get more and more things like this. There is a huge jump in anti-Semitic attacks, a huge jump over the last couple of years. And not just that, anti-Arab, anti-gay, anti-just about everything you can think of. Why do you think that is? What kind of a society has been created in the last couple of years that might foster such an environment? It's not hard to figure out. These things are all related. It's, you know, we've been talking about this for quite some time. I'm not happy to see it actually coming true, but it's a fact. It is coming true, and there's a reason for that. And we absolutely need to speak out and fight it on every level.
Yeah, I think this is interesting in when you think about some of the discussions around what whiteness is, and I think the codes and the signs and symbols have changed, but I think it is unattainable, whatever this sort of wave is trying to create, and a lot of the writing on whiteness being sort of this unattainable thing that is used to discriminate against, but really has no definition, in that we are all kind of from different places and so on and so forth. I find this political moment is the same way. How do you know? How will you know who is on your side or who isn't? Is it only by the type of hat you're wearing or, you know, and are we going to have now, rituals for, you know, like the sort of modern handshake of how to find out who is associated with one belief or another. It's really insane, I think, in plain terms, because you can't know who might have radical beliefs like this. But it is truly radical. I mean, and then to have students buying in, they're going to change it. And it's as cultural phenomena kind of change and morph and transform over time, they're, you know, bringing these signs and symbols in with sort of cultural amnesia, and they're being raised by this generation who's got a big problem with the demographic changes, but these students and so on, they don't really have the points of reference, the same struggle at all. So I can definitely see it being treated as fun or funny when it's not. It's ignorant, and it's really a shame, because you know, you're going to push something that is so ill-defined and so specious. You know, if you are remotely interested in borders, you know, you are all in with this ideology, and you know, it just sort of leaves no room as you get further and further divided, and that nationalist ideology will become something that is homogenous, but in the most perverse ways you can think of.
You know, if you were to go to a war memorial Right. And let's say there's a statue or something. You just went there and you snapped the statue in half, or, you know, you were caught on a video urinating on some kind of, you know, memorial to all the soldiers who fought and died. You know what they do? They would basically publicly shame you in the media. Everybody, you know, you might be able to redeem yourself someday and say, yeah, I was just a stupid kid doing this. But you would not get light treatment for doing something like that. Now, when you stand up with all your friends and you do a Nazi salute, I'm sorry, but everybody who fought in that war and the many people who died in that war, you are doing the same thing. You're doing worse things, I think, because you are completely blind to the sacrifices, to the horror, to the threat that we faced. And they should face the fire for that. Now, I'm not saying their lives should be ruined, but they definitely should not be given an excuse that kids are just being kids. It's completely wrong. And it starts at the top. It starts, you know, we just had our president over in Paris. Why they let him in is beyond me. But it was the 100th anniversary of the end of World War One. I was watching the scene in London on Sunday morning at 11 a.m. on the 11th of November in 1918. That is when the armistice was put into effect. It's huge, literally 100 years ago to the moment. One time zone away in Paris, they were also having ceremonies. Our president chose not to walk with everybody down the Champs-Élysées to the Arc de Triomphe for whatever reason, some stupid reason. He felt slighted or insulted, or he was better than everybody else and didn't have to walk with world leaders about a world war, about the end of a world war, the chance for something positive in the future. No, he didn't want to be a part of that. It was such an embarrassment. And then on top of that, to cancel the visit to the U.S. cemetery in France because of rain. Yeah, the helicopter couldn't fly. I get it. It was only 50 miles away. You're there. It's a 100th anniversary of the end of a major war, the war to end all wars. That's what they called it until they realized there'd be a sequel. And he couldn't be bothered to bring his motorcade 50 miles. Do you realize he has not visited troops anywhere in the world? Not once. So I don't get it. I don't get how people who support this guy and support the troops are able to make those two work together, because he clearly doesn't. He'll maybe write a check or something like that. That's as much as he can grasp, but he doesn't actually care. And I don't think that's a reach to say that. He simply does not show up when it matters. And if he does show up, it's got to be about him, not about the people that actually are making the sacrifices.
He's really done a really bad thing as far as the symbolism there. It's a real missed opportunity, I think. And something you said about it not being about him, I think that's the crux of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not about him, and you know, he felt slighted, so he was going to have a little tantrum. And It is a treatment of others as subordinate, and he's had that his entire life, and so now he is in power, and he feels, yeah, you know, it's his job to make decisions or whatnot, but you know, if there's consequences, they're not consequences for him, and someday that's gonna catch up with him, I think.
Absolutely. Hey, Kyle, we're out of time. We could talk off for hours about all these things, the good things, the bad things. It's good to hear you, too, and it'll be better to see you next week when we're both back here for our pre-Thanksgiving show. That's going to have to do it for us here tonight. I want to thank everybody for listening. Please write to us, otw@2600.com. Hey, we saw a film called Cavalcade from 1933, and this was the song they played at the very end, a lot of the words. Make a lot of sense today. Different artists, but same words. We'll see you next week. Good night.
Why is it that civilized humanity can make this world so wrong? in this hurly-burly of insanity. Our dreams cannot last long. We've reached a deadline, a press headline. Every sorrow, blues value is news value tomorrow. Blues, 20th century blues, they're getting me down. Who's escaped those dreary 20th century blues? Why, if there's a God in the sky, why shouldn't he grin high above this dreary 20th century dim? In this strange illusion, chaos and confusion, people seem to lose their way. What is there to strive for, love or keep alive for? Say hey, hey, call it a day. Blues, nothing to win or to lose, they're getting me down.
They're getting me down.